Hello, I'm not Stuart Clarkson. This is Roy Martin saying welcome to the Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Now, this week we're talking about radio, of course, and podcasting and streaming. And our guest host is Phil Dobby, the co-founder of Loudmouth Communications. He's a podcaster, presenter, and a writer. And he's got in touch with Johnny Gould and radio programmer and podcaster Liam Thompson to talk about the two things. So, take it away, Phil. Radio
Today. The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Thank you, and I am Phil Dobby, and I'm here on the Radio Today podcast to explore the future of radio in the age of streaming services and podcasts. Now, I have just Googled how many podcasts are there, and Professor Google says there's somewhere between 850,000 and 1.7 million active podcasts. The measurements are that precise. Not all of them as popular as Joe Rogan, of course. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk to Liam Thompson, who is now making podcasts after a career as a radio programmer, so he can give us both sides of the story. But first of all, well, we all know Johnny Gould, of course, sports journalist, radio presenter. Well, he was a radio presenter. We've all been that once, haven't we? Now he's podcasting, amongst other things. There's Johnny Gould's Jewish State podcast, For Those Who Are Willing to Listen, is the subtitle for that one. Johnny Gould's football channel, For Those Who Are Willing to Support Aston Villa, and various other ones as well. First off, it's a slog, isn't it, podcasting? It's a bit like working in radio and perhaps not getting paid, depending on how well you're doing at it. But it is very democratic, and that, I guess that is the beauty of it. Anyone can have a voice. You can get into depth on subjects, and you can go off in any direction you like.
That's right, Phil, and it's an absolute pleasure to engage directly with listeners who, by the way, will be very quick to tell you if they don't like it. The interaction with my audience is absolutely wonderful. A lot of it is cordial and pleasurable. They're quite happy to hear subject matter in a narrow area of interest that they would not have heard anywhere else. Obviously, I get that at Villa. The fans know full well that I don't get paid for it, that it's a passion center for them and me. And so it's pleasant most of the time. The Jewish podcast is essentially an outward-looking one. It's not specifically for a Jewish or Israeli audience. It's just the starting point is an outward-looking podcast with Jewish values, which means that my guests are from all colors, all creeds, all faiths, all beliefs, even some people who might have been regarded as enemies who are now allies. It's about, as you say, those who listen and those who are willing to listen.
So could you do that show on mainstream radio, do you think? Or is it something that really is only suited to the
Yeah,
radio?
You can't, can you? Because, first of all, if you did put out a podcast which was so weighted to a certain region or a certain issue, you'd have to localize it. What's the old maxim? All news is local, even on a national station. Mm. For example, I'm doing a podcast which is being released this week on Israel's remarkable vaccine story. Now, that has achieved some mainstream news coverage. But if I was attacking it on talk radio or LBC example, I would say something like, and what here in Britain can we learn from that? Now, that is one of
that does sound fairly mainstream to me, but maybe that's just because I'm doing podcasts, finance podcasts that are looking at yield curves and how to control them and all that sort of stuff, which is, not everyone's cup of tea. But what about when does we've now got so many radio stations? At what point do they, because they do need to start to narrow down who they're homing in on, because otherwise they're all just chasing each other. At what point do you say, well, this is a subject which is too narrow for radio and really this should be podcast territory?
I really believe that radio absolutely needs to take out the content that people missed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for 15 minutes and put it out to become a social media hit. I used the example of Nick Ferrari. Now, Nick Ferrari did for Diane Abbott's reputation by her mathematics, which didn't quite work out, about police officer wages. Now, it's possible that 60,000, 80,000, maybe even on a good day, 150,000, 200,000 people were listening at that time.
Yeah.
But I challenge anyone, north, east, south, or west, that doesn't know about that incident now, and they heard about it via podcasting, via Twitter, via YouTube. Everyone knows the jokes are all about that.
But that was a gotcha moment, wasn't it? I'm not necessarily sure that's a great use of broadcasting. It was a gotcha moment. Maybe she was wrong. She didn't do her sums right. And I'm not defending her in any way. But if radio stations are only there to get those gotcha moments and then spread it through social media, I mean, are we saying that's what, you know, talk radio stations are becoming? They're becoming a vehicle for getting content so you can then socialise.
No, I don't say that everything needs to be clickbait, like obviously that was. Mm. But, you know, there are very, very important messages that get out there that are missed in a live streamed program. And so there is an example of how radio stations need to use, harness the extra power of social media, not just to get people to have actually heard what they said at this valuable time that lasted 12 minutes, but actually to get them to tune live to the output, because obviously radio has its dynamics that podcasting doesn't.
Yeah, well, my podcasts are normally 15 minutes long. I know you talk longer because you've got so much more to say. But radio stations, of course, are broadcasting 24 hours a day often, and yet we're only listening to the radio 3 hours a day, which actually surprises me that it's that much. But for that share of the audience's attention, we're having to be there all the time. So, I mean, with podcasts, that's relatively easy. I can manage to maintain a standard for 15 minutes. Even I can manage that. But how do you manage it when you've got a radio station that's going 24 hours a day?
Well, it just has to be excellent all the time. And, for example, BBC Sounds doesn't often put presenters under pressure on BBC Radio, don't they? So you have someone who's an absolute genius, like Steve Wright in the afternoon, who in 40 years, I don't think I've ever heard him have an off day. He preps the show in the morning or late at night. He jots things down which came to him during the show and then makes them into subjects, which he then gets everyone to applaud, you know, that brilliant way he does with the Zoom format, which he's carried into the 21st century as no one else
did. So you've just explained why the average radio audience is 3 hours a day. It's you listening to Steve Wright every day. That's what's bumping that average up, isn't it?
And I have to tell you, I lapped up every single David Bowie output on BBC Sounds from all sorts of places, Radio 6, and Radio 4, you know, something that was said on Radio 2 about him, the documentary. I absolutely go for the subject matter as well. It's BBC Sounds is revolutionising the way people listen to BBC Radio, and they should be congratulated for it because it's another thing it does is it takes away from its reliance on Apple or, you know, Spotify. It's making its own platform, and I think that's a very, very welcome balance of power for BBC's independence.
I guess the BBC produces so much content, it makes sense, doesn't it, that they try and get you to listen again as much as possible. So almost broadcast radio is building the content library up, and then you go and you can listen to it live or you can listen to it later. That's the whole idea behind it. But again, look, the one other benefit of podcasts, which is more difficult on free-to-air radio, of course, is the fact that you know precise numbers about who's listening and when they're listening and how long they're listening for, which is good for you as a podcaster. It's also invaluable if you're trying to get sponsors, because sponsors will actually know that their message has been listened to.
Oh, it's amazing the analytics that you can find out, Phil. And the more listeners, the more detailed the analytics are. I pushed the boat out slightly with a podcast which lasted 1 hour and 4 minutes. And I was really worried that it was too long and that I'd made a terrible mistake and should I serialize it. But from the analytics that came through, and it was easily the biggest podcast I've ever done, told me something really instructive. First of all, if the content is good, stick with it. And I edited out as much as I could from this interview. It was with the creator of Unorthodox, Deborah Feldman, a Netflix smash hit starring Shira Haas. And it won a whole series of Golden Globe Awards. And I was very lucky to get her at the beginning of lockdown in her house in Berlin, which I would never have been able to do without Facebook Messenger and lockdown. She was at home making coffee and it was wonderful. The two things I learned from it was that a podcast can be long if the content is good. 86% of people who started the podcast were still listening at 55 minutes, which was an amazing thing. And the other thing I found was that there was this really sudden, huge drop of audience at 21 minutes, which lasted about 90 seconds. And it took that minute and a half for the audience to recover back to the 80% mark. And I thought, what on earth has happened there? Maybe there was some dead air. Maybe there's a mistake on the technicals. So I scrolled back to that 21-minute part.
It wasn't you talking at that bit, was it, Johnny?
Me.
Oh, it was. All right.
It was me talking about myself, silly bugger.
Yeah.
It was my attempt to use radio values on a podcast. And I was saying, here's what's coming up later, right here on the podcast. And then I played a little bit of, you know, programs tonight on BBC One, yeah. That sort of thing. And I scrolled back to a few things that people had heard, or people, I wanted people to hear that if they like this. And that was a big mistake. So, of course, I edited it out.
Yeah. So there's something to learn, though, isn't there, I think? Because the finance podcast I do it for a bank in Australia. They pay for it. And they're very interested in knowing how many people are listening to it. So we track the level of engagement. In other words, how many people are listening to the last moment. 98% we get, which is pretty good.
Very good.
But, you know, they don't want that to slip. And the 98%, the 2% is people who are leaving right at the very end, just as I'm signing off. So now I have the quickest sign-off ever to try and get the percentage up. I just go, that's it for today, back tomorrow. I've got to try and finish it off before they get to the stop button.
That's exactly right. I run a jingle at the end encouraging people to follow me or donate to or something like that, and I lose everyone before the end, but I stick with it because you never know, there are people listening and you've got
so to final question then, is podcasting any sort of threat to radio? Is it an opportunity for radio, or what does it do about this, you know, when we've got, as I've said, so many radio stations around searching for their own niche? I mean, are there just too many radio stations and you know, more broadcasters should be focusing on podcasts?
Yeah, because the barrier to entry has been lowered. You know, all these providers now are saying, you know, we can program 11 years on a laptop and you can put out your radio station to the world. The amount of streams of people listening are in the, you know, the tens now, and, you know, they're not viable. But of course, it is about carriage. It's about legitimacy. It's about licenses. And, you know, those should be, I think, the barrier to entry for radio. But yes, podcasting is a threat to those radio stations who don't take it seriously, and an opportunity for those who do. And I think radio needs to integrate with podcasting because we aren't going away.
Good to talk, Johnny, as always. Catch you again very soon.
It's a pleasure, Phil.
And he makes a good point that we need to carry forward. Radio needs to integrate more with podcasts. Let's look at that with Liam Thompson, who was the programme director at launch of Virgin Radio Mark II and at Magic in London before that. In fact, he's been at it since he was 17 years old. He's a bit older than that now. So, Liam, you have programmed radio stations and now you're building up a stock of podcasts, including The Smart 7, which is a daily news podcast with Jamie East, others as well. What are the differences as you see between creating good radio and creating strong podcasts?
That's a pretty fundamental question, I think. And I think the coming battle is one of linear versus sort of atomized content. And radio traditionally and TV traditionally were just linear. You know, you put it on, you waited for your program to come on, you know, and then as Skybox has developed and so on, you were able to catch up where you could record. And eventually, you know, people became entirely disconnected from linear TV. Radio still hugely depends on linear listening. And, you know, without pointing the finger, I think probably the Skybox is more influential than Netflix maybe, but Netflix is huge influence now in terms of, you know, suddenly your TV is anywhere. You can watch all the episodes at once. All of the things that were kind of really just accepted as facts not that long ago about TV have been exploded.
And now that is coming to radio, isn't it? Really?
It is coming to radio. And that the kind of, so podcasts have been around for quite some time. Radio stations play around with podcasts, but they don't really, most of the radio podcasts, and I haven't sat and with a notebook and ticked through them, but most of the radio podcasts tend to be sort of best ofs or listen backs or compilations.
Yeah, just play again, in other words.
Radio stations make very little new content or very little kind of bespoke content that would fit the brand.
Yeah.
Radio has survived largely because it stacks up all the hours of linear listening and it says, if you buy an ad with us, we'll play that ad six times over the, you know, the course of the day, and most of our audience listen for X number of hours, so they're going to hear that ad once or twice or three times, and that's how you, you know, that's your revenue model. And you sell the big number, and the advertisers like the presenters and they like the brand and they get to hear their ad. And there's a sense of community about radio that somebody else might say to them, oh, I heard your ad on the radio. that, you know, it, obviously it's got to a bigger scale than that. And you know, nobody's knocking on the Coca-Cola CEO door going, I heard your ad on the radio. But the principle of that and the kind of community of broadcasting, linear listening, spend time with us and we'll pop commercial messages into it as we go. That's still the core revenue model. And a bit of radio's time has been spent on the music side, certainly freaking out about Spotify and music streaming. And oh my God, they're coming to kill us. What are we going to do? Let's make ourselves slicker. Let's talk less. Let's play more music. We can beat the streamers at their own game. And I, you know, I've been in stations where, you know, people saying, oh, we're talking way too much. Why are they talking so much? We should play more music. Can we get more music in? I've run breakfast shows that are more music breakfast shows that where you squeeze the content and shove in as much music as you can. And I kind of, when I crossed the road onto the Spotify side of the road, and particularly, you know, Smart 7 is a daily news podcast that's 7 minutes every morning, seven things you didn't need know you needed to know. You know, if I was being glib about it, it's effectively a well put together radio news bulletin that we popped out of radio and then serve across every platform.
But the interesting thing is that goes into a Spotify playlist, doesn't it? So you can listen to, you can build up, and that's, it gets into that thing that you're talking about, linear versus, you know, being able to pick and choose actually what you're listening to. So you can build up a Spotify playlist to say, well, okay, this is the sort of music I like. I want to hear the Smart 7. I want to hear a bit of business news, a bit of sports news, and that all gets interjected. So your journey to work actually is almost your tailor-made radio station, which is, I mean, I think we've all been thinking about this for a long time, but it's here now, isn't it?
It is here, and that's the thing that we're all worrying about. We're over here worrying about linear and are we streaming our music and are we competitive with the music services? Well, on the other side, Spotify has gone, oh, hold on a second. We make music content available to people. They're all listening to podcasts. What if we added podcast in? And they've done the research. Spotify has a really good research arm, and they publish a lot of research on their website. And it's worth going and having a look. They this won't be dramatically surprising to radio people, but it should be terrifying at the same time. Their research shows that when they mix music and content, they get more listening hours.
Who'd have thought
you
that?
You go, well, I guess I could see how that would be. But now, what that means is that Spotify, and Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify, has said it publicly last summer. He said, we're coming for radio. They can monetize the time spent listening more effectively than we can because they have more details, because they have logged in listeners, because they know who the people are. And they've decided that they can put together content and music in a totally customizable way that radio can't do. And then suddenly, if you're in radio, you're kind of going, firstly, I think we're fighting the wrong battle with Spotify. And secondly, they're coming around the back trying to take our minutes and monetize them. And the share of radio and the time spent listening to radio is under threat.
Yeah, well, you talked about those days when, you know, everyone knew who the local radio station was, and you know, if you had an ad on it, then people would comment on the ad. Those days have gone because that was all about scale, wasn't it? Well, first of all, those local radio stations have disappeared into international radio stations by and large. But also, you know, the discoverability of radio is diminished somewhat as well. Because look, I started in radio. I was about the same age as you were, actually, but a decade or two before, and in those days, there's only 19 commercial radio stations, so you discovered radio just by scanning the dial, and there was very few stations, so you picked one. Now, of course, there's hundreds of them, the same as there are hundreds of thousands of podcasts. So the fact that you're getting an audience just because you're there is disappearing now, isn't it? So that is a challenge for radio as well, along with the fact that, you know, you can choose what you want if you do it online.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the radio has chosen to head down, particularly in the UK, that the kind of, let's launch 16 different varieties of our brand, you know, and that the kind of, you know, I think Clive Dickens kind of reinvented that with Absolute and adding extra channels in, and it pushed up the numbers and it gave them a good story to sell. But now all the brands are doing that, and there's, you know, four flavors of Magic, and there's six flavors of Capital, and there's,
so
you know, whatever it might be.
Should they keep doing that, or should they look for new niches then? Mm. Because they're all, again, you know, they're all going after people who want to listen to the 80s, but I can listen to the 80s on Spotify, and you've got all your transmission costs associated with that. Do you use those channels to do other stuff, or dare I say, even have less channels?
I think if you had to make the choice, you know, if you have a big brand, I think you should have a big tent, you know, and that means not necessarily having six small tents that sort of stitch together. I think you know, when you look at, you know, still a massive chunk of radio listening time and minutes in the UK goes to the BBC, you know, and they have the ultimate big tent where there's content, there's entertainment, there's Greg James, you know, there's some of the stuff that Radio 1 particularly at the moment are doing some really entertaining stuff. And it's back to the sort of content driven stuff. And I used to do focus groups for Magic, and we'd sit and listen to people who, you know, were about the older end of the scale. This was kind of 5-6 years ago, and they would talk about. So even then, there were people who used to use Spotify, and they had a kind of a categorization in their head of the different stations. So they would rank sort of Spotify as a utility. They would go, you know, when I'm at home on my own doing the dishes or something, I might put Spotify on and listen to my music. Then kind of Smooth sat just above that, because Smooth is very slick, streamlined, didn't have as much content. And Magic, driven by, well, it was Neil Fox at the time, but Magic was a kind of bigger feel to it, a bigger station with more content, with more promotions, you know, a bigger tent basically. And it had a different place in people's minds because it was more engaging. So I think about how many tents you need to have, and could you have a big tent that a lot of stuff came out of?
So there you'd be talking about content that you're producing for podcasts, which is not necessarily stuff you're putting to air.
Yes, I think so. And that make more use of your core brand. But think about whether you need to have 6 or 7 streamed brands beside it, or whether you could make the core brand bigger and then create interesting stuff alongside it to compete in the Spotify wars. Because there's no reason that your podcast couldn't be in that Spotify playlist, or that couldn't be in the, you know, or take that concept and reinvent it, you know, and create, you know, a Magic type Spotify playlist that has interesting content about the musicals or the best bits from the different brands or new content from the different brands, and then customizable with Magic music choices. Yeah. You know, there's
you've got the talent, of course. That's what radio stations have got, you know, hopefully. And if the program director's been doing the right job, you've got an abundance of talent there that you could, you know, that individual podcasters, you might have a, you know, a glimmer of talent with one or two. There's a lot of dross out there as well. So, you know, these brands have got the opportunity to leverage that talent.
I think it's startling when you look down the podcast charts and you see how much talent is in podcasting. And, you know, that's one of those things that if I were a program director in a station now, I would be scouring through those podcast charts and going, okay, so you've got the skills, you've got the communication ability, you understand a lot of the stuff that we would need you to do in radio. I wonder, should we be bringing them the other way? You know, that we see people leaving radio to go to do podcasting. But actually, if you're a program director and you're looking for talent, the first place you would be looking at would be scouring down through those podcast charts and listening to audio and hearing people. You know, when you listen to, I was just listening to My Dad Wrote a Porno this morning, and I was just struck by that dynamic and how good Alice Levine is on the radio, but not, you know, not on the radio in this case, but that you kind of go, that you can hear that talent and that ability shine through, and you kind of go, God, she should be on the radio, and yet she's not now, you know, and there's that kind of, so I think we've just got to recalibrate how we think about this. Look at the value of the spin-off stuff that we think fills a slot, and actually say, could we make more of what we have and the talent that we have, or could we find new talent that we could make work for us?
Now, the problem is, right now, only 1 in 5 adults are listening to podcasts on a weekly basis in the UK, which is still pretty low. I mean, they listen to 6 podcasts on average. These are the latest figures I've got. So there's a long way to go. And I'm just wondering what that means to, you know, if it's nipping at the heels of radio now, how much further will it go, and how quickly does radio need to adapt if podcasting really takes off? It's pretty big now, but there's still lots of upside. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was radio, I'd be relieved that it's only at that level. The way I would think about it, if I were sitting in a programmer's chair this morning, is effectively Spotify needs to be treated like a competing radio station. They've got 20% reach. You know, and that puts them right at the top of the table in terms of some of the markets, and you've got to pay attention to them like that.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, that the, so,
and they're at the point is as well, they're a harder radio station to listen to right now, that it's not as easy to turn on Spotify as it is to turn on your radio in your car. But that's now when we get better systems in cars, and we've got smart speakers now, obviously the more they roll out as well, where it's actually just as easy, in fact, possibly easier to listen to Spotify than it is to turn on your radio station. then you've got problems, haven't you?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So we're at that bit in the kind of Game of Thrones type movies where the two armies are charging head first at each other across the field. And it's not going to be too long before they make first contact. And then they're kind of, you know, we're rushing to their platform. They're rushing to our platform. We're both chasing the same audience. They've got technology. They've got an ability to monetize the audience they reach. I think we need to gear things up a bit.
Yeah. So do you think then, a final question, we've spoken long enough now, haven't we, I think. Do you think there's a point where radio stations that have got multiple streams should be, just be saying, well, okay, we should just have one stream now, and then we need to get into this non-linear game. We need to be looking at the other bespoke content that people can pick and choose and add into their stream, pretty much the way Spotify has. Is that the model they should be looking at?
I think it's probably the best response because, you know, The community and the broadcast platform and the backbone of broadcast is still radio's greatest weapon because, you know, it's hearing it in a shop or it's having somebody say to you, God, did you hear that thing Jeremy Vine did this morning? You know, that's still, you know, it's what all of those platforms are chasing is user reviews and authentication. It's not an accident that every time you order a takeaway, delivery wants to have a chat with you. You know, it's that they're searching for that, you know, the social proof, the validation that comes from somebody else going, yeah, I heard that. God, that was mad or great or awful. Or, you know, and there's there's very few podcasts that get to that scale. You know, so if the builder's in downstairs doing some tiling or whatever, and you say to him, Joe Rogan, he's likely to go, yeah, listen to it in the van. You know, so that's a show that's crossed over into almost sort of radio levels of consciousness. But I think having a bigger tent, making more of the content and the talent that you have and reviewing how much of those other things you need and how much of the kind of space on DAB that really it's not serving the brand in the long term.
Look, I've got a very simple rule in podcasting. When the dog starts barking, you've done enough. good to talk, Liam. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Good to talk, Phil. Thanks.
There we are, Liam Thompson. I don't know about you, Roy. I thought there were some very useful insights there. We talked about chunking up content, doing something akin to BBC Sound so you can listen back to that content anytime. But then, more importantly, perhaps looking at creating playlists like Spotify is doing where specialist content can be inserted, people can choose music, but keep that one mainstream channel because that is still what's going to get talked about. That's what I took out of all of that.
Indeed. Thanks, Phil. That's Phil Dobby speaking to Liam, who was saved by the dog, and also to Johnny as well. I think we have to remember that radio is what we do, and the whole audio industry is kind of based on what radio has done for 100 years. So, yeah, it's radio first, in my opinion, and then everything else is a bonus. Ooh, controversial. Thanks, Phil.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
All right, coming up in future weeks on this very podcast, we've already got lined up some superb interviews with loads of different people, and we'll tell you about those as we go through the next few weeks and months as well. And as ever, we hope Stuart finds the time to come back and do some more recordings for us. Now, before I go, I want to tell you about CleanFeed. And whether it's an OB, an interview, or co-hosting, CleanFeed is designed for radio and podcasters. And now it's simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is great and you can record it too. It doesn't cost you anything to get started and you can find out more at cleanfeed.net. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully, we'll all be back together again next week.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.